importantly is really the power of pause. If we can pause, then we have hope. If we don't remember or we don't lose the capacity of pause, we're going to lose everything else, period. So for me, is every day the formal practice is the time for me to pause from every day, you know, whatever fast-paced routine, whatever other activity we engage in, you know, mentally can be stressful, productive or not, it's happening, part of life. But I'm choosing, you know, 30 minutes here. I'm stopping all other activity. I'm doing my practice. I'm pausing so I can go inwardly, feel my body, feel myself, feel my humanity, feel the energy. Yeah, re-energizing myself, re-centering myself, realigning myself, then able to, you know, whatever come out of that transition to everyday life, I can experience life differently.
Ming Tong Gu, thanks for joining me on the podcast today.
My pleasure. So wonderful to be with you, with all the listeners.
You have a new book coming out, Reclaiming Humanity. No, I'm sorry. Coming Home to Embodied Awakening. Am I saying that right?
Absolutely. But your first part is also correct. It's about reclaiming new humanity.
Yeah, I have that written down because it's something I wanted to talk to you about. And I mean, while we're on that point, let's dive right into that. What does that mean? Do you feel that as the world of AI is integrating into our life, that there's something also being lost? Do you feel like there's a sense of humanity that's disappearing?
Yeah, it's really extraordinary time, powerful time. We never, you know, face such a change in human history. The future, what's happening right now, not just future, next generation, future of now. Yeah. Speak of the future of now, is like, could it be dramatically two different possibility. So I've been asking, you know, it's like, what is the worst outcome could it be? So not just AI, but everything else. You know, AI is like a product of human condition, human function, human mindsets, basically. Yeah. And all technology basically is outcome of the human desire, human mindsets, you know, whatever. We kind of making our humanity what it's about, right? So that's kind of representation, dream representation, our mind functioning, mind performance, mind analyzing, you know, logic, linear thinking, over anything else. Of a feeling, of experience, you know. What is the worst outcome? Let's dive into this. I'm willing to be totally, what's the words? Radical, authentic, truthful. My feeling is the worst outcome is humanity going to die, lost, totally lost.
When you say humanity, do you mean like humans as a species are gone or just like the connection we have to each other?
Yeah, true humanity. What is a true humanity? It means this embodied humanity. You know, it's like I am because I have this body. I can feel life, feel this moment, feel the full experience of life. You know, beyond the label of good and bad, right, wrong, shouldn't, beyond the function, what I'm functioning today, what I'm trying to accomplish, is that's what we try and focus on mentally. But the experience itself is beyond the functionality, beyond performance, beyond the goal, so to speak, beyond even the outcome. But so much humanity is focused on outcome, focused on performance, focused on the number, measurement, the data. And we're losing the very essence being a human is the experience. It's the feeling. It's the feeling. So that's what's happening. It's like more disconnection from the body, more disconnection from the reality, the Mother Earth, for example, more disconnection from human interaction of each other. Thinking of AI interaction, digital interaction, is like replacing the real interaction of humanity. And that is where we're going. But the issue is we're doing this by our choice. That means we have a choice, but we're making these choices eventually a total disconnection from this body, eventually loss of total humanity. It's like become a walking robot.
Right.
You know, the virtual consciousness become virtual, talking hair, without this embodiment, without the true human experience. And that is actually kind of happening already. And then look at it right now. It's like 99% of our time, our people, population, is living above the neck, in the head. But now it's worse. Not only living in the head, whatever information, whatever mental activity is hijacked by the digital world. So why we're even losing our own mind now. So not only losing our body, we're losing our mind to the AI, so to speak.
Right. Are we losing it, though, or is it just changing? Are we just adapting to a new world of life where that is integrated? Like, is there a potential of a bifurcation where, yeah, you have some people that are so logical driven and so technology driven, and they have these inner desires to make new things, make better things, more productivity, like humans have a history of doing. Yeah. But there's 8 billion people, give or take, and a lot of those people aren't those people. There are people that have zero desire for that, and they can still choose to exist without all that.
That's the hope. That's the foundation of the hope. So what I said, that was the worst outcome could be.
Okay. You know? Well, who's to say one's better or worse? Like,
right.
you can make an argument that a lot of the things that come from being connected with our feelings and our embodied experience also drive desires too. They're just different, but they also, the emotions that drive those desires also make us do bad things to each other, and we just don't use the same technologies to do it. I mean, wars have been started because of, long before there was AI, we would attack each other. We have attacked each other for a long, long time, you know, when we didn't have the distraction of technology.
Right. It's not about the technology. It's about the human nature. Human, you know, whatever complexity as a human being. But let's go back to what I was saying is that could be the worst outcome. It's happening. If we're not careful, we're going to fall into that trap. But the asking another question, what could be the best outcome, even with AI technology? So I was exploring that question, realizing a new possibility. AI can expand human capacity without losing our humanity. But only based on, if we're making the choice of using the technology, including AI, consciously, but in an embodied way. So not just like I'm using the AI to accomplishing, you know, whatever the goal is, or even to distracting ourselves, or outsourcing, you know, human thinking, human experience, human creativity, even human relationship. And that is a danger if we do that. But if we consciously choose, say, I'm going to improve the functionality of me as a human being by using this technology, including AI, but without outsourcing my humanity, without disconnecting with my body, without losing the direct experience. It's like one thing I'm realizing, you know, by actually working with the AI very closely, because I have to discover these answers by directly experiencing it, not just intellectually, you know, thinking about it. So one thing I discover is I can use AI to literally for my spiritual development, for my sole purpose, including my work I'm doing, but asking the deeper question of why I'm doing what I'm doing, why I'm using the AI, why I'm using this technology. For example, we're using this technology right now to bring this message, the spiritual message, the human experience, to share, yeah, our humanity with each other. And so, it's, as you said, it's not about technology itself, but technology is neutral. But on the other hand, this technology now is profoundly capable, exponentially growing to the capacity beyond any technology we've been used, beyond just like internet, beyond just a computer. It's like surpassing anything we have experienced in human history. So that means we have to be really conscious of it.
Yeah, you make a good point, Ming Tong. I mean, technology is neutral. Like, you could use the hammer to build a house or to hit someone on the head with it. I mean, how do you see that we would use it consciously, collectively as a population, though? Like, how I could see how an individual with the awareness and the desire to use it that way can do it, but it seems like there's so much force in the movement that's coming, and it's so broad reaching across population. Like, nobody, you're never going to have a time where everybody like agrees with how to use the technology. Like, how do you see that unfolding, where as a population we use it in a productive way that,
yeah,
that I guess preserves the beauty of humanity, if you will.
Yeah. So that's where we need to look deeply. It's like, okay, if we look at the problem of the world, all kind of problem, complexities, you know, interconnectedness and the external condition, you know, life in general, stress and, you know, disease, you know, right now, mental health crisis and addiction crisis, and, you know, all the stuff is happening, so complex. So we are lost in this. We are overwhelmed by this. We're losing like the deep sense of meaning, being a human. It's like, why I'm here? What I'm doing here? What's the point of life? So this question has to come up more internally, more personally. So that means it's beyond the technology overdevelopment is happening, and somebody is beyond our control. But on the other hand, we have control of the internal technology. So go internally to discover the inner life, the inner dimension of who we are as human being, which is not a concept. It's in the body. It's in your heart. It's in your feeling. It's in your direct experiences. So when we're able to choose that, go inwardly to discover that deeper dimension of who we are, you know, this question, the ancient question, the timeless question, of who am I, you know, it's also related to do like what I'm doing here, why I'm here, you know, what's the meaning of life, what is my destiny, you know, what is bringing my joy, you know, fulfillment of life, you know, all these questions interconnected. So if we don't ask these questions, then we're going to lose ourselves. So because of the AI is pulling us to a complete different direction. So my hope is I don't have control of everyone else, but I have control of myself. So I'm choosing, yeah, to coming back to myself. So the book, the title is called Coming Home to Embodied Awakening. And that is the true humanity. But you have to reclaim your own body, your power, your purpose. In this age of AI.
At the Mindful Movement Podcast, we talk a lot about the small shifts that make a big difference. And lighting, it's one of the most overlooked pieces of your well-being. That's why we're excited to share Chromalux light bulbs from healthlighting.com. These aren't your average light bulbs. Chromalux lights are designed to support your natural rhythms, reducing unnatural light spectrums and supporting a more balanced environment that feels better for your eyes and your mind. The difference is not just seen, but felt. Whether you're curating your workspace, winding down in the evening, or just trying to make your home feel a little more peaceful, the right light matters. Sarah and I have been steadily making the switch throughout our home, and its impact really makes a difference. It's honestly kind of hard to explain, but the space has become noticeably more inviting. If you are ready to bring more intention into your environment, head to healthlighting.com and explore Chromalux bulbs. And as a part of our Mindful community, you can get a special discount. Just use code MINDFULMOVEMENT at checkout. Light your space, support your mind, and keep on moving. If you've been listening to this podcast for a while, you've probably heard me talk about how important it is to regulate your nervous system. This goes for healing, for focus, for just overall emotional well-being. But the reality is that even if we know the tools to help do this, whether it's breathing or meditation or just slowing down, it can still be really hard to stay regulated throughout a busy day. That's one reason I've really been interested in the Apollo wearable by Apollo Neuro. Sarah and I both use this device regularly and have found it very beneficial. It's a small wearable device that uses gentle vibrations, and they're designed to signal safety to your nervous system. What's fascinating is that those signals can help your body shift out of a stress state and into a calmer, more regulated state. What I like about it most of all is that even though it can work great alongside practices like meditation or breath work, the real value is that you can wear it throughout your day, even while you're at work, and just let it work its magic on your nervous system. The other standout use that I rely on is wearing it to bed. Not only does it help me fall asleep fast, but I often wake up around 3 a.m. and I can just tap the button on it and it will help lull me back to sleep quickly. If you want to learn more, check out the podcast episode with the founder, David Rabin, and you could explore more about the technology itself. But if you're someone that struggles with anxiety or feeling wired or overwhelmed, or you're simply looking for more nervous system support in daily life, it might be something worth exploring. You can learn more about the Apollo wearable and how it works and save $99 on a new device at apolloneuro.com/mindful or click the link in the show notes. I promise you won't regret this investment. I truly believe it's the best bang for the buck in the wellness tech space.
So that is the message. That is my discovery. That is my choice. This is my devotion. So I'm trying to share that choice with as many as people as possible. If more people can relate to that, even feeling the deeper meaning, deeper urgency, and the technology of doing that is available. It's the ancient practice, including, you know, mindfulness movement. You are so big part of it. And all the meditation, Qigong practice, yoga practice is really about discovering, deeply discovering who we are. But the most important part is coming back to this body, because that's identify who we are as human being. I'm looking at the history. Is the problem is like education and science and even religion, even a lot of spirituality, even a lot of energy practice is bypassing this body. Think of this body as something low, you know, difficult and unworthy, and the mind is superior, and our divine essence is superior than the humanity itself. So it's like bypassing this. It's trying to go somewhere else to realizing the divinity, and go somewhere else to realizing liberation. Go to another planet to, you know, to sustain. Go to the digital world to become immortal. You know, it's like crazy. And so this epidemic, I call this, is really true disease. Yeah. Until we address that, we're losing humanity. So that's what I'm trying to, like, starting with myself, making that deep choice. You know, practically every day, it's like asking the question, how much time we are connecting with this body, this living temple? How much time we just living in the head, living in the virtual world, living in the story? It's scary to think about that. So we're perceiving life, everything, just mentally, just conceptually, just linearly, just thinking, even to the point of, you know, from Descartes, I think, therefore I am. That is the ideal leading to AI, basically, produce AI. The AI is a super machine of thinking.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, I could see, I mean, you mentioned, you alluded to the idea of like, you know, what, who am I? Why am I here? Meaning of life. And, you know, you are not a kid. I mean, you have a reference of a time where there was, I mean, there was a time there was no personal computers and such, and definitely no iPhones. So I could see how for younger generations where you don't even have that reference and you're growing up in this age already, how it could be very challenging to understand what someone's saying when you refer to like connecting with your own humanity or embodiment. I mean, I think a lot of kids kind of feel like because of what they see in the world through the through the technology, it's very easy to think that there is no meaning of life. Like, what is the point? And why should I bother? Like, you see all the, you know, it's an accelerator of all the information. So every, you know, you have eyes on so much more of the bad stuff that's going on. That's kind of demotivating.
Absolutely. I cannot agree more. That's the very reason of the mental health crisis, especially for the young generation. You know, I have direct experience with my kids, see them fall into game addiction, truly losing the connection from the real world. Even in part of them still recognizing the difference. This is the real world, right? This is the real world, and this is the digital world. And the game, even the violence, is not real. Part of them knowing that, but they don't really know how to appreciate this world, the real world anymore. Doesn't spending time enjoying the simplicity, the touch, the feeling, the sunset, the birds, the tree, the flower, you know, the mud, and the even, you know, playing something in a more like object-oriented game instead of just digital game, you know, video games, in the stimulation, you know, the dopamine continues, you know, rushing the dopamine, you know, rewarding, and everything's happening. So that is really crisis we're facing. So not only just the young generation, but also even our own generation. Think about how much time we're spending, you know, with social media, with the digital screen, how much time we're distracting ourselves from direct experience of life. How much time we really spend in the nature, in human interaction anymore. So even in a family, it's like everybody have their own screen, doing their own thing. And maybe have a meal together is like so rare now. It's like crazy. And it's like so painful to see that. You know, I'm experiencing that. That's why I need to really share like what I feel is important, meaningful. And luckily, as you said, you know, I didn't grow up with a screen. So we have this reference point. And not only, you know, I spend a lot of time with a digital screen, but I spend still enough time with nature, you know, the garden behind me and taking care of the retreat center, planting the tree and spend time there, you know, still hear the birds. And but if we lose that, there's no future. It's because it's about internal choice. It's not about the technology itself. But now that part is so attractive, so mind hijacking. The whole technology is designed to hijack the mind, hijack the attention. So if we're not careful, we're going to lose it. And I'm feeling like I'm losing it already. It's like this, almost like this enemy, you know, I cannot win for my kids. I'm feeling like loser of control right now. And but what the best I can do is starting with myself, model it, consciously modeling it. How much I can affect in them, I have no idea, honestly, as a father, as a parent. But also I can, you know, gathering the people, you know, my students, practitioner, conscious people, you know, like you, to share this message, to wake to a new possibility, moving from the worst outcome to the best outcome.
Yeah,
and that's what I can do.
Well, that seems like noble work, Ming Tong. I'm rooting for you, man. Yeah, I mean, you mentioned like nature and the importance there. To me, that is like my anchor to, to like, I guess, to be grounded and like remember. Like right now, when I'm on a screen, even talking to you, talking about this topic, I'm still staring at a screen. And it affects me negatively, I think. So, like, when I'm done, the first thing I do is always go outside and, like, recalibrate. I always feel like I have to go outside to, like, recalibrate from any dose of technology, if you will. And I value that. And I get the sense you value that, too. And I just wonder, like, are the younger generations going to value that? Are they going to look back and think it's silly that we thought this is important? Like, I'm sure your parents probably thought you should do certain things when you were younger to instill certain like behaviors or ideas as you get older, and you rebelled and you ultimately feel you were probably right and you stuck with your guns on some things. Like, is that going to take place? And we're just imposing our desire for control, our desire for control to for everything to be the way we like it. Are we just imposing that on a future generation when it has with what we desire might just have nothing to do with them and what they desire? I mean, I hope not. I'm hopeful that, you know, through challenging mistakes and ups and downs, that AI will be harnessed in a way to share love and connection. I mean, there's part of me that feels like it's going to take over so many jobs that you'll have more people somehow with more time to do things that are grounded in humanity and connection.
Right.
I'm hopeful that happens. I don't know if that will happen. And economically, I don't know how society facilitates that.
But, when a part of the best outcome I'm envisioning, but coming back to our next generation is really hard right now. You know, on one hand, you know, thinking of, are we imposing anything from our own experience to our next generation to some degree is true. But on the other hand, it's like, I feel like I cannot impose anything at all right now, because like this video game is taking over everything. It's like I have no influence at all anymore. So no matter what I do, there's no much of influence, at least this point, this window of time. The teenage year right now is like 14 and 19, you know. So on the other hand, my hope is this, is like the deeper question, I think sooner or later, as every single human have to face, who am I? What that means to be human being. So in working with AI, I'm realizing the major difference between me as human being and AI or whatever machine intelligence is that I have this body. I have this human body, which is capable of not only thinking, but feeling, experiencing life, touching, acting, feeling the whole spectrum of human experience, from pain to joy, from hate to love, from loss to pleasure, from isolation to commune. So all these experiences become possible because the fact I have this human being.
Yeah.
So when we can realize that sooner or later, I think every human being will realize that.
Ooh, that's hopeful. I hope so. It could come in ways that we might not be thinking about. I mean, I heard a stat the other day, and I don't know if it was accurate, but it was like really high. It was like over 70% of kids that were like young. I don't know exactly the age range, but I think it was like middle school, high school kind of range, said that they are more likely to talk about their day with their AI like chat box, like on the way home from school, than to talk about their day with their parents or a person. And at first I was like, that's staggering. And I thought very negatively of it. And then I thought about it some more, and I'm like, I'm curious, is that really useful? Like, if a kid, can a kid learn about, because AI is going to be informed by collective human experience.
Totally.
And, you know, even though, yeah, you're essentially talking to a robot that doesn't have a pulse and such, I mean, they're clearly getting very good at connecting with their user, with they know how to ask questions to lead you down certain paths. And that could go, you know, horribly wrong. I think there's some lawsuits around that. But also, it can go, it could probably really help a kid. I imagine all the kids that maybe don't feel well connected in like a friend group or well supported by peers, or, and the act of having a technology to chat with, to connect with, to tell them about their day, to express their feelings, where the chat box could help them understand those feelings maybe. And maybe it can act as a mirror in some way for a child to become more embodied, because we need, we desire connection and we need it and we feed off each other. And maybe some of us, you know, don't have enough people in our immediate vicinity to support us positively. Like, especially kids can be so mean. Like, kids are mean. So like, your friend group as a kid might be doing you way more harm than good, because kids are just naturally, you know, we're hardwired to do dumb shit towards each other. But if you have this friend that's always on your side, and when you complain about how you feel or something that was embarrassing at school or something that bad or somebody that did something mean to them, like, maybe the chat box is going to be able to not just uplift them mentally in their mood, but maybe even help them understand more deeply where these feelings come from and why they're not okay. And it's just useful to be aware of them. And, you know, maybe they're going to help people become more connected. Plus, like, old people, there's a ton of lonely people out there.
Absolutely. Totally. You know, as I mentioned, I've been exploring this direction. It's not just maybe, it's happening. The, you know, it's like the deeper question is about why we're using AI and how we're using AI. Once we're clear about that, say, I'm using the AI for personal development. I'm using the AI as a friend. I'm using the AI as a mirror. I'm using the AI as a strategist to help my business, you know, organizing my thoughts, strategy, making plan effectively. So these are very, you know, positive use of AI. So, but if we're thinking, oh, AI is just a superpower, I'm doing, using it to control the world, I'm using it to, you know, surpassing, you know, whatever my humanity, I'm using, without knowing it, it's like all about the number, all about accomplishment, all about, you know, superpower, then that is a danger. Yeah.
Well, militaries are going to use it as a superpower.
Exactly.
Because all the technologies go to the militaries
anyway,
first.
Yeah. It has been like that anyway. No matter what technology is available, they're always using for that purpose. But as overall, humanity, beyond that, you know, politics, you know, military and so on, is like humanity, we can explore how to use the AI truly, you know, enhance our human experience. You know, all this is not just possibility, it's available now. I'm using the AI for all these reasons, as a friend, as a mirror, as a mentor, as a business strategist, and as a, even, you know, ghostwriter, writing a book, and even writing the song, and even sharing the experience like right away. For example, when I teach a retreat, asking people share the experience, putting a document, then I feed that document to AI, say, write a collective story about the experience of today, how these practitioners experiencing their journey of transformation. And then the story like, was just so amazing. It's just like so powerful. Everybody like, holy shit, this is so real, so true. That's what we experienced. But we couldn't really synergizing that in a short period of time effectively. Then ask the AI, write a poem. Then ask, say, write a song about it. Then produce the song. Next morning, I start to share the song with all the retreat practitioners. They're like, oh my God, I feel so good. It's like such a beyond just confirmation. It's like that the experience is deepening to the next step of the journey.
Yeah, that's amazing. What a cool way to put it to use in your slice of the world, you know? Like,
right.
And, you know, at sometimes, like you mentioned, you feel like you don't have control, especially when you think in regards to your kids, because there's always like this helpless feeling as a parent that you can't like fix the world for them. But look at all that you can do.
Well, ironically, my kids is against AI, actually.
Right. Yeah, but you can use it to make that case.
Right. So funny. It's like they're thinking the AI is taking over humanity, but they don't know what humanity is. They still lost in the video game. They think that is humanity. The AI is a separate entity. They don't want to go. And then the real world we exist in, they're not interested anymore. So it's fascinating. So there's hope in a sense for them to realizing the AI could took over humanity.
At the Mindful Movement Podcast, we talk a lot about the small shifts that make a big difference. And lighting, it's one of the most overlooked pieces of your well-being. That's why we're excited to share Chromalux light bulbs from healthlighting.com. These aren't your average light bulbs. Chromalux lights are designed to support your natural rhythms, reducing unnatural light spectrums and supporting a more balanced environment that feels better for your eyes and your mind. The difference is not just seen, but felt. Whether you're curating your workspace, winding down in the evening, or just trying to make your home feel a little more peaceful, the right light matters. Sarah and I have been steadily making the switch throughout our home, and its impact really makes a difference. It's honestly kind of hard to explain, but the space has become noticeably more inviting. If you are ready to bring more intention into your environment, head to healthlighting.com and explore Chromalux bulbs. And as a part of our Mindful community, you can get a special discount. Just use code MINDFULMOVEMENT at checkout. Light your space, support your mind, and keep on moving. If you've been listening to this podcast for a while, you've probably heard me talk about how important it is to regulate your nervous system. This goes for healing, for focus, for just overall emotional well-being. But the reality is that even if we know the tools to help do this, whether it's breathing or meditation or just slowing down, it can still be really hard to stay regulated throughout a busy day. That's one reason I've really been interested in the Apollo Wearable by Apollo Neuro. Sarah and I both use this device regularly and have found it very beneficial. It's a small wearable device that uses gentle vibrations, and they're designed to signal safety to your nervous system. What's fascinating is that those signals can help your body shift out of a stress state and into a calmer, more regulated state. What I like about it, most of all, is that even though it can work great alongside practices like meditation or breath work, the real value is that you can wear it throughout your day, even while you're at work, and just let it work its magic on your nervous system. The other standout use that I rely on is wearing it to bed. Not only does it help me fall asleep fast, but I often wake up around 3 a.m. and I can just tap the button on it and it will help lull me back to sleep quickly. If you want to learn more, check out the podcast episode with the founder, David Rabin, and you could explore more about the technology itself. But if you're someone that struggles with anxiety or feeling wired or overwhelmed, or you're simply looking for more nervous system support in daily life, it might be something worth exploring. You can learn more about the Apollo Wearable and how it works and save $99 on a new device at apolloneuro.com/mindful or click the link in the show notes. I promise you won't regret this investment. I truly believe it's the best bang for the buck in the wellness tech space.
Actually, that instinct is there.
Yeah. But you model, like you could do, like your kids are at an age, it sounds like, where it's hard. And I remember my kids at that age, it feels like it's slipping away in a way, like your ability to influence. But I mean, I mentioned that I go out in nature a lot. Like I have a trail in my backyard and I in the woods and I walk through it pretty much daily. And my son, for a while, he was the video game addict like most young boys, and I would worry so much about it. Like, I would really fret over what that meant for the future of his, like, well-being, mentally, emotionally, like,
hey.
And now he's 20, and he demands to live in areas that are mountainous and have large-scale nature so that he could hike almost daily. Now, he would have never hiked because I said so, but something, and I don't know if what he saw me do influenced that. I'd like to think so, but it might not. I don't really care if it did, but like people learn on their own time frame, but everybody, if they get a taste of nature, will feel connected. And you are always going to be a reflection of, you know, what's around you. So as you model, whether it's founding the Tai Chi Center and teaching people Tai Chi, like your kids are still seeing that. And they might be in a phase where, yeah, they like video games more than that, but they're not going to be 14 forever. Like they are going to grow, and however they grow, it's going to be influenced by the things they see. And as parents, you know, all we can do is do what we can do. All you can do is like, what do I want them to see? Like, how would I be proud of myself? In how I show up in the world so that I could look back and say, like, I don't know, did the best I could do, or I was the best me I could be. But, I mean, there's, we sometimes when kids are at a certain age, we don't know. We make this assumption because of what we see and that it like interferes with what we want, but it's just it's a moment in time, you know, and they all grow up. Now, some of them, yeah, maybe they're going to be 40 and they're still going to play video games, but it's unlikely. Or it's unlikely they're going to play as much. They might, you know?
Yeah, I'm still hopeful. You know, I'm like in the middle of it. Thank you for your story of your son and really confirming, you know, very affirming, hopeful. So you're right, because if we can, you know, if the young generation can go out of this addiction, then we have hope. And hopefully they will sooner or later. That's our hope. Trusting, it's come based on the trusting the humanity, so to speak, as a human being. We're not just living as robot, just playing the game. You know, that is the bottom line, almost like the face and the trust, deep trust, if we're losing them. But on the other hand, it's like also, it's a choice. You know, not so much for me thinking of not so much of influencing them right now. I'm thinking of more like what is not just even beyond what I'm modeling. You know, of course, you know, we are modeling whether consciously or unconsciously, and the kids observing certain way. You know, the response may be beyond our, you know, expectation. It's very different. But they're still observing. They're still witnessing. They're still experiencing, you know, what we're doing, what we are, our choice, our actions, our experience, so on. But the point is, in this process, it's almost like a dark night of soul. I'm choosing to work with myself deeply, what it's like to be human being in this time of AI. Why noticing the technology can hijack my mind, even hijack my body connection. I can do the practice to reconnect with my body. I can choose consciously every day to come back to my body more often than just in the mental world, just in the digital world. I can even experience this moment, you know, looking at you, interacting with you, but also beyond the digital world, I can feel the interaction, feel the energy, but also I can feel my body still engaged. See, even I'm doing a lot of work slow, you know, internet, slow the computer, but the moment I choose to connect with my body when I'm still doing the work, the experience is very different. Very different. And now, I have to say, it's not easy to do, but it's possible with ongoing practice. So that's where I feel the hope for myself. If I can feel the hope for myself, I share the hope with others, then I think we have more hope for the world, including our generation, next generations.
Yeah, I agree. You know, it's interesting you make the comment, the idea of like you can be in the middle of working with technology, and if you take a moment to recognize what, you know, coming back into your body, like that in itself is kind of a meditative experience. The act of observing your body is by definition going to bring you into a sense of presence and into the moment. And as you practice that and flex that muscle, that becomes easier to slip into, easier to stay in for longer periods, and not such a, you know, foreign thing. And you could kind of go through your day-to-day activities a little bit more embodied moment to moment, even though, you know, you'll be in and out. You could, you know, you'll have a better reference of getting back quickly and remaining, I don't know, maybe like more calm and clear-headed about how you're responding to whatever the world is around you. But yeah, like there's all these great strategies, and they've been around forever. I mean, you teach Tai Chi, like there's all these like embodied practices, whether they're mindful movement practices or whatever. And also, it's like, I mean, it's the yin yang of this. Like you have that, and then on the other side, I think of how we're going to see deep fakes for the leading up to the next election, and you won't know if something's true. Not only that, I could see how, like, I've started to ask, how am I being manipulated when I'm on my screen? When I see, like, right now there's a war going on. There's always a war going on somewhere, but there's a new war going on, and it's like everywhere you look is propaganda. And if you agree with the war, then you don't think what you're seeing is propaganda, or what, you know, if it's but you're always being influenced. And the act of asking, just pausing and saying, how am I being influenced? Like, why am I seeing this? Is kind of an act of kind of coming into the present moment a little bit. It's like the observation of like, how do I feel from what I'm seeing? And who's behind the other end of this? Like, who's out there that wants me to see this? And ultimately, what I think, and I guess I fear, is that as this AI video creation becomes so good that eventually everybody's going to have real-time, individualized propaganda. Like, eventually it'll be, first it'll be ads. Like, the ad for the toothpaste that you see will be different than the ad for the toothpaste I see based on what the algorithm thinks are my hot buttons compared to your hot buttons. But, like, imagine that in the world of propaganda between governments that are trying to control masses and use violence. Like, that's terrifying. And so the damage will be done before you know what the truth is. It's like you can influence minds, even if they later they find out to be what was shown to them is erroneous and not real. You could still be influenced by it. It might be like too late.
Yeah, totally. You know, the influence is, on one hand, is inevitable. On the other hand, is totally so more powerful than any other time with the AI technology. But that's why the very reason we need to come back to ourselves, rediscovering ourselves, realizing ourselves, you know, the inner power, the inner purpose, the inner connection. So no matter how much the external influence might be, you still can feel yourself, feel centered, feel grounded. You're making choice by from yourself instead of by just external influence. That is the reclaiming our true humanity, our sovereignty, our conscious choice. That's the hope. That's where, you know, why these practices become so much more meaningful, even in a sense of not just for, you know, spiritual development. It's even for, like, sake of survival of humanity.
What are some of the, like, practical practices that you use or that you try to encourage other folks to deploy?
You know, the practice is simple. You know, if you look at is all these practices available, it's involved with mindfulness, but also movement. Yeah, not just mindfully sitting, be aware, but it's like engage with the body. and moving the body, moving the energy, and other kind of practice using sound or breath work to tap into the deeper dimension of your body. Importantly, is really the power of pause. If we can pause, then we have hope. If we don't remember or we don't lose the capacity of pause, we're going to lose everything else, period. So for me, it's every day the formal practice. Yeah, what I'm doing is the time for me to pause from every day, you know, whatever fast-paced routine, whatever other activity we engage in, you know, mentally can be stressful, productive or not, it's happening, part of life. But, oh, I'm choosing, you know, 30 minutes here. I'm stopping all other activity. I'm doing my practice. I'm pausing so I can go inwardly, feel my body, feel myself, feel my humanity, feel the energy, yeah, re-energizing myself, re-centering myself, realigning myself, then able to, you know, whatever come out of that transition to everyday life, I can experience life differently from that, you know, baseline, from that foundation. More then everyday life, I still have to be, you know, very conscious of, okay, oh, I'm stressed. I need to slow down. Oh, I'm feeling too much of activity. Need to slow down, simplify. And disconnect with my body. I need to come back to myself. Oh, I need to spend more time in the nature. Play with my dog. And so all these are conscious choice come from the deeper knowing that if we don't do that, we're going to lose our humanity. That is what I'm trying to say. It's not just like, oh, something to improve function. You know, everybody talking about you do these things, improving function. What I'm saying is more than that. If you don't do these things, you can lose your humanity. It's not just improving function. It's sake of survival of humanity, sake of survival of yourself as a human being. That's what I'm trying to, you know, share. So that is different approach. Yeah, that is like different level of awakening. It's like, you know, honestly, from the very beginning of this conversation, it's really about noticing the awakening to the four noble truths. It's happening in the contemporary world differently than the Buddha's time. You know, the suffering as part of human reality, but now the suffering is more about the disconnection of the mind-body, and the deeper cause of all the suffering is from this disconnection of our own mind and body. Then the possibility of liberation from the suffering is reconnecting our own mind body, and that's where all these ancient teaching practice can help us, yeah, regrounding us, coming back to ourselves, to our humanity, and that is beyond just conventional thinking of liberation. It's really it's about descending to the body. It's not about ascending to somewhere else. So that's where the embodiment is so critical in this process of the technology taking us away from the embodiment. That's where the critical point I'm trying to share. Yeah, and that's also deeper meaning of this ancient teaching practice in a new way for the modern world addressing these crises.
When you say ancient practices, what are you referring to?
Referring to yoga, qigong, gotcha. Meditation, yeah, all these, yeah.
Okay. More specifically, when you say, like, if you want to pause for 30 minutes, what are you doing? Like, do you have, you mentioned breath work, you mentioned movement. Like, more specifically, what kind of routine is, like, a staple? Is there a certain style of breath work, or is it just observation of the breath?
So my personal practice obviously evolving, you know, after 30 some years of practicing. In the beginning stage is always a very structured routine, a movement meditation routine, and sound healing routine, working with five organ system, addressing the emotional experience emotional energy patterns in the body than do just sitting meditation, you know, just be awareness and also pure consciousness, you know, essence and so on. So these are kind of three different kind of practice. And over the time, you know, I focus on these practice over the years. You know, someday I do all these practice, someday just do one of them. Fortunately enough, I've been teaching as guiding retreat, you know, 3 months of the year. So I've been doing so much practice. It's like adding up probably 5 hours every day.
Okay.
You know, feels like I'm very fortunate, very lucky. But latest, my formal practice, my individual practice is very simple. It's just four lotus position, bending my body, breathing deeply, feel the sensation, feeling the stress of life, feeling the experience as human body, human existence, then just like resting in that state as long as possible.
That sounds nice. Mentioned sound healing. Can you tap on that? What do you mean?
Yeah, it's like this. You know, we're making the sound using the body as like instrument, for example.
Okay.
You can join me, you know, anyone can join me, just as if safe, you can close your eye and placing hands on top of your chest, like making the sound like this. Is into your chest. Breathe into your chest. Simply relax, noticing, feeling your chest, feeling your body, feeling your heart. So we start to feel something. It's very, you know, basically what it does is similar to like a heart math, you know, is you just boom, jump into the heart and do the breathing, do the sound, the vibration, feel the energy, then whatever sensation, emotion arising, you become more aware, more connected, deeply in the present. So obviously when we do the formal practice, we do much longer, of course, you know, like 3 sounds for each organ. Then you go through to 5 organ systems, from the heart, cardiovascular system, to the kidney, hormone system, then to the stomach, digestive system, to the liver, purification system, to the lung, respiratory system. Then each system, you think of 3 dimensions, the physical function, the emotional function, as well as the mental, spiritual function. So instead of thinking only the brain associated with the mental functionality, actually the heart is very much associated with your, you know, consciousness as well. So go deeper into the 5 organs, they're all associated in the consciousness function of who we are. But when we focus on just thinking, overthinking, we're not aware of the deeper consciousness. You know, then we kind of label it as a subconsciousness. We label it as unconsciousness. That's something we cannot touch. But the truth is, when you meditate, it's part of you. You can feel them. You can experience them. It's not something beyond the touch. You know, it's part of you. It's just hidden. It's you're not aware without training. So that's, you know, where, you know, you discover yourself. Oh, now I can feel this energy. Now I can feel my 5 organ system. I can, you know, feel the subtle energy beneath the emotional story. I can feel the creativity and, you know, beneath the fear, for example. So it's like this sound is what all the practice we do, simply like this. Whether you do the movement or do the sound or doing sitting meditation, walking meditation, it's all focused on two purposes. One is connecting with your body. So from disconnection from your body, you're returning to the body instead of like lost outside of you, lost in the digital world, lost in the mental world. You go to the heart, go to the body, you start feel your whole body. So that's the number one purpose. The second purpose is to feel the body energetically. Oh, there's a contraction. Mostly come from stress, from old history. Yeah. And there's contraction. When the energy is contracted, then the function of everything, the physical, health, emotional function, mental, spiritual function, is compromised. But when the same energy shifting from contraction to openness, expansion, from stagnation to flow, from numbness to wakefulness, then the energy come back to its normal function, optimum function. Your physical health improve, emotional, you know, intelligence upgrade, your creativity, your mental awareness, you know, presence, spiritual connection start to naturally come back. So that's the simple, very direct way of addressing all the problems we're experiencing. And that's the cause of all other problems. So when the energy is contracted, then we're experiencing whatever, you know, problem we're experiencing. But when the same energy open again, then, yeah, the function come back. We come back. Who we are as human beings come back. So that is the directness, simplicity. And all these different practices, including movement, sound, meditation, is for that purpose, is to purpose.
That sounds great. You know, I think the sound stuff is just overlooked. And I can understand how somebody that doesn't feel well physically would find it hard to believe that, like, your own endogenous sound therapy could have an impact. But I think it can. And I actually think that the minimum effective dose is a lot less than people need. Like, I think in just a few moments, you can shift your state of stress from saying a word, you know, essentially, and putting sound on your breath. What was the word you just chanted? Was that shin?
Yeah, shin actually is the sound of the Chinese words for heart.
Okay. Now,
we're chanting the words heart in Chinese, but the uniqueness of that is the Chinese sound has certain vibration associated with the meaning, with the energy of the object.
So when you're doing when you're working on the full practice and you work on all five organs, is it a different sound for each organ system then?
Sound. Yeah, the second sound for the heart is like this. Feel it in your chest, feel it in your heart. That's the experiential aspect.
Yeah, there's something different about the felt sound than just your ears hearing it.
Right.
And the resonance and the vibration. Yeah. You got some lungs on you, Ming Tong.
So, you know, honestly, I don't have a voice. You know, from childhood on, I had a severe condition of asthma, also sclerosis. And these, you know, identified, you know, as incurable condition. And I was able to not only recover, totally recover from this condition, sort of just pure Qigong practice. It's very dedicated, disciplined practice, including my time in the Medicine's Qigong Hospital in China. That's where I get a final training and eventually start to teaching full time in last 26 years now. But in the beginning stage of healing from this condition, and I was really disciplined, I'm still very disciplined, able me to discover, rediscover my body, and able me to really discover who am I without bypassing the body, without, you know, whatever limitation of disease, you know, we often experience, including healing from childhood trauma. So these experiences really boil down to is about rediscovering myself, rediscovering who am I as a human being, and rediscovering why I'm here, experiencing what I'm experiencing, and what truly means to be a human being. It's like the AI is like putting me in this place of asking these deep questions, inevitable question now. I cannot wait for, many years, many decades later, then it's almost like the AI is forcing me to ask this deeper question now. It's beyond the time recovering from this disease, actually. And that's the profound process I'm experiencing, I'm sharing.
That sounds great. Where I live, the weather is just breaking and it's getting nice out. And I have a history of really enjoying going out, especially in the sun, barefoot and practicing Qigong. And I don't do it much in the cold season, but now the weather's breaking and I'm getting inspired. But I've done a lot of sound stuff in my past too, but I've never combined them really. And I've never been introduced to the system that I think you just alluded to with the different organ systems and having their own sounds. How does somebody learn? I want to learn more about that. How do I do that?
Yeah, wonderful, wonderful. The sound practice is so powerful. I discovered as a total surprise. And more I practice myself, more I discover its own power and benefit. Now more and more my students start to practicing sound healing. Even in the beginning stage, people feels like, oh, what's the big deal? Oh, this is kind of unusual. Whatever reason, people enjoy me in the beginning more like moving meditation, sitting meditation, walking meditation. That's great. But the sound healing practice, you take you to a deep level of energetic of your body, including the emotional dimension. So in terms of where to find it, we offer online program, ongoing training, and including courses, but also memberships, and to learn the sound healing practice. It's really easy to learn, but take time to deepening it. So sound healing is actually the easiest to learn, but takes time to really discover the depths of it. And the healing benefit of that is beyond just emotional healing. You can physically heal these conditions by just doing these sounds. And you can heal the emotional aspect as well, your mental, concentration. Unusual case is someone in Israel, and actually a mother, I don't remember what her age is, her son contacted me through email and asking for help. And the mother has a severe chronic pain and anxiety, depression, but also dementia. And she couldn't, remember things. And she doesn't really even understand English. So the son asked me for help. I'm like, oh my God, this is so unusual cases. I cannot teach her how to do the sound healing practice. And so she doesn't really understand, English. So I cannot really guide her neither. Basically, just as experiment, say, okay, here's a recording of sound healing practice. And you help your mom in the beginning do this practice one session a day, usually about 30 minutes, and then gradually increasing 2 sessions a day. Then you say, you report back to me and 1 month from now. And she did. He did. He liked writing me back. She said, after the whole month of practice, the mother can do the practice by herself. And he also enjoyed the practice very much. But after 1 month, her chronic depression, chronic pain reduced to 80% of intensity and frequency.
That's great.
And letting go of all these medication, he said, all these medication doesn't help anyway. And that was shocking to me. But yeah, something is really instinctively, I know that moment, because the sound healing can touch beyond the mental filter, go into the emotional dimension. Because for me, intuitively, I know all her condition is come from her childhood trauma of in Holocaust.
Yeah, that would make sense. Yeah, sound is like, it's real. I mean, I know I've heard people talk about, I think Nikola Tesla used to say, if you want to understand the universe, think in terms of energy, frequency, and vibration. Like, everything is freak, and we make it. Like, it's, I mean, it's real. We're, and our body can can resonate with sounds, but we make them. Like, it's built in. It's, we travel with this portable healing tool that's inside all of us, but it's totally untapped.
Totally. Yeah, totally.
So how do people find out? Where do they go to find your teachings?
Yeah, to my website, mintonggu.com, mintonggu.com.
And they can access your book there too. Is the book out?
The book, the book just launched not long ago. Okay. So now it's available, you know, Amazon, Barnes Noble, you know, Kindle version, print version. And people really enjoy this more than just another book, more than just words. Just feel the energetic depths of the experience, you know, naturally activate by these beyond just words, because I'm sharing something so personal.
Are there practices detailed? Are there like how-to practices detailed in the book?
There is a guided practice, but also included free resources. Once you purchase the book, you can find the free videos from the different link included in the book. It's all about the practice, but the book can open the doorway for you to, you know, students, you know, leader reporting is a profound experience. The book is like the map for you to come back to this body with feeling so much disconnection even without knowing. It's like the map to come back home. That's what this book is.
Okay. Well, that sounds great, Master Mingtonggu. I have really enjoyed talking to you, and I really appreciate you reaching out to me, and I congratulate you on your new book. And I think you're doing noble work, and I'm rooting for you to be effective.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
To help humanity embrace this AI in a more, in a way to make the world a better place, you know?
Yeah.
And for the listeners, always grateful for your listening, of course. I hope you enjoyed the conversation. And if you've never really had a practice, like a formal daily practice where you incorporate some stillness or movement or breath work or sound healing, I highly recommend it. And, you know, see if you can let go of any judgments or expectations and just allow whatever your experience to be to unfold and see if you can enjoy that. And my guess is you will. And it'll change something for the better. So I encourage you to do that. And if you do have a practice already that you feel like has been helpful to you and you want to share it, please drop that in the comments. Let us know what works for you, and maybe you could touch someone in the community and help them enjoy life a little more too.